walks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guests today are Drs. Eleanor Spicer Rice and Christopher M. Buttle, co-authors of Dr. Eleanor's book of common spiders. Spicer Rice is a writer who holds a PhD in entomology and the author of Dr. Eleanor's book of common ants, a series of four guides about ants that she discussed on Talking Animals in September. Dr. Buttle, her co-author on the new book, is an arachnologist, as well as Dean of Students and Associate Professor at the Department of Natural Resource Science at McGill University. Like Spicer Rice's ant guidebooks, the Book of Common Spiders is short, providing breezy, well-written entries on more than a dozen spiders, plus several more sidebars, profiling the high-profile widow to lesser-known arachnids like the daredevil spider called the Bold Jumper. If right about now you're thinking, I'm scared of spiders, or at least creeped out by them, you might be comforted to know that Dr. Spicer Rice felt much the same way before undertaking this project. We'll hear about assorted spiders, including some whose resumes would have to have some pretty impressive details listed under special skills. Maybe explore why many folks harbor a fear of spiders and see if there's a way to turn a corner on that the way Dr. Spicer Rice did. And perhaps much more when I speak with her and Dr. Buttle in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Meanwhile, a quick programming note. Next Wednesday is, of course, the 4th of July, so I'm going to take the day off. And Bev Capshaw has been kind enough to agree to sit in. I'll return the following Wednesday, July 11th. And while I wish you a happy 4th, I also hope for a safe and sane one. Please think of our animal friends, large and small, before setting off any fireworks. Right now, though, let's get to the good doctors with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. This is Dr. Eleanor Spicer Rice and Dr. Christopher M. Buttle on Talking Animals. Good morning, Dr. Spicer Rice.
Good morning.
Welcome back to Talking Animals.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Great. And good morning to you, Dr. Buttle, and welcome for the first time to Talking Animals.
Well, good morning. I'm delighted to be with you also. Happy to talk all about spiders for as long as we can.
Okay, well, great. I think that we've come to the right place then. Now, I noted at the top of the show that Dr. Spicer Rice, that you'd previously written this series of guidebooks about common ants, but how did you and Dr. Buttle team up to write this new book?
Well, after I wrote the books about ants, Dr. Buttle read the books and thought this might be really good for spiders. And Buttle, Chris, you can tell them about how people are scared of spiders, and it might be better to know more about them. And so he contacted me over Twitter.
Okay. So now, Dr. Buttle, as an arachnologist, and I hope to God I'm pronouncing that correctly, I imagine there are any number of spider books you could write or could have written, or any number of approaches to writing them. So when you saw Dr. Spicer Rice's Guide to the Common Ants, what grabbed you about that? What appealed to you and said, hey, maybe that's the way to go for a spider book?
Well, sure. I mean, yes, you pronounced arachnologist correct, so well done there.
So far, so good.
So far, so good. You know, the thing that really attracted me to Eleanor's writing was it was very accessible, and so that's one reason. And the second reason, it told the story of the species. So the best thing about being interested in animals, as you know, is that every animal has its own story, and the way that Eleanor sort of crafted the story of the species of ants really, I thought, was a great way to approach spiders, because that's the idea, is to lessen some of the fear and anxiety and tell interesting stories about species that we find in our homes and gardens and forests. So that's really what drew me to reaching out over Twitter. Believe it or not, a good thing about Twitter is you can connect with really interesting people like Dr. Spicer Rice.
Yeah. So with that in mind, I mean, do you feel like when you saw the ant books, is there, I guess for lack of a better term, is there a Dr. Eleanor brand that means something to you initially as a reader, consumer, and now as a participant?
Yes, and more so now because Eleanor's written a few books now under that theme, and I think people, it really resonated with people, and that was the goal, is to kind of team up with a slightly different topic. But people are kind of freaked out by ants as well, so there's some similarity there. But there was an attraction to that, and you know, people that look at the spider book will often talk about the ant books as well, because they recognize the brand and the way that Eleanor writes that's so beautiful and crafts great stories about small animals.
So, Dr. Buttle, since spiders are indeed your area of expertise, I'd like to ask you to discuss the fears and queasiness that people commonly feel about them. What's behind that, and what are sort of, I guess, the fundamental causes, near as you can tell?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the thing about spiders is everyone has a spider story, and they either love them. Actually, not that many people love them. They're okay with them, or intrigued by them, or there's absolute terror and true arachnophobia. And I want to start by saying that arachnophobia is a real phobia, and some people are really really, you know, scared of spiders, and that's something that we need to recognize, that some people, it's very, very legitimate. But there's a big gray area where a lot of the fear is out of misunderstanding and lack of information. And where it actually comes from is really interesting and pretty hotly debated. You know, some fields of study or some scientists suggest that it's really there's a genetic basis to it, and the idea of over evolutionary time, humans being wary of things that might hurt them. And the other side is sort of the more cultural aspect of it, and the fact that it's the nature versus nurture argument, the idea that the environment itself, it creates a hysteria around spiders and a fear. And so there's those two kinds of sides to it. And like so many things in life, I think the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. There's probably some genetic component, but it might be quite minor. And a lot of it's just about sort of the environment and the pop culture and the way that spiders are perceived. Although I will say they did a study a couple years ago surveying entomologists, and entomologists are the people that study insects, and a lot of entomologists are afraid of spiders, and they think it has to do with that extra pair of legs, because spiders have have 8 legs and insects have 6, so there's an extra legginess that freaks people out, and the way spiders move, they're a little bit unpredictable, and people get a little freaked out by unpredictable things as well. So I think those are some of the factors.
So here's the thing then. So it sounds like, as you described it, there's a spectrum, but as you noted, arachnophobia is a very real phobia. So for people kind of at the far end of that spectrum who are truly disturbed, bothered, freaked out, whatever the right word is, by spiders, to what extent, in your experience, can those people be pulled back from that end of the spectrum?
Yeah, I think it's really variable. Some people can, and some people, I've worked with some arachnophobes who couldn't even look at a spider in a magazine, a picture, for example. And through, you know, very slow and careful approaches to looking at pictures, to looking at dead spiders, to watching live spiders from afar, to looking at tarantulas in a terrarium, to actually handling live spiders, you can, with some people it is possible to really work, and it's really around learning, education, and demonstration, and a slow process. Some people can move from, you know, an arachnophobia through to something where there's at least not terror and a little more acceptance. But it can be tough for some people, I'll admit that. And Eleanor can speak about her own arachnophobia.
Yeah.
To some degree, but a lot of people, it's just about, you know, an unknown and a fear of not really understanding what they're all about.
Yeah, well, it's exactly what I was about to do, because one of the things I think is intriguing about this collaboration is that Dr. Spicer Rice did feel at least some level of arachnophobia, as I understand it, before collaborating this. So, Dr. Spicer Rice, how does what Dr. Buttle said square with your own feelings and experience, especially before working on the book, and then maybe you could describe a little bit about what happened during the course of, I guess, working on the book and how you feel now?
Sure. I think that Dr. Buttle is dead on about the way people feel when they're afraid of spiders. I have spent my entire life terrified of spiders and embarrassed that I'm afraid of spiders because, like you know, I'm an entomologist, and I will sit in a lab and have ants crawling throughout my hair, and I couldn't care less. But if I almost ran my car off the road one time because a spider came down from the visor. I mean, I almost killed everybody in the car because I was so scared about this tiny creature that was on my visor. And they just, like he said, they freaked you out. And I did a lot of things to stop being afraid of spiders because I was so scared. I even got a pet tarantula that I ended up just being terrified of its whole sad existence. You know, I mean, there were so many things that I tried. And it wasn't until working with Chris on this book about spiders and where I learned about what they are and what they do and how they behave and how just incredibly wonderful these creatures are that I totally stopped being afraid about them. Just like it is with so many things in life, once you get to know something, it's not as terrifying as it is when it's this big black box or this hairy thing that you think is going to bite you in the face.
Yeah.
Many of the things that I thought about spiders, I thought as an entomologist who, you know, got a master's and a PhD watching insects, I truly thought that spiders were aggressive and that they were chasing me and that, you know, and it's not true. Even in writing the book, though, when I would Google to see what a spider looked like, I would scream out loud on some of these spiders just looking at them on the screen because they freaked me out. But then after I learned about them, they're really beautiful creatures and they are all around us, like it or lump it. Chris has done density studies that he can tell you about. And you're no more than 4 feet from a spider wherever you are, unless you're like in the middle of the ocean or on a, you know, in a very sterile environment. You're surrounded by them. So that fact used to be something that would frighten me, but now that's something that excites me, and it's all from learning about them and writing this book.
Okay, so two questions or follow up questions, I guess, sort of before after kind of versions, I guess, is one is that, as you know, again, you're an entomologist, you have got your master's, you got your PhD in entomology, fine to have ants crawling around in your hair. So what do you think was the initial sort of root cause of, in that world that you lived in and grew up in, as we talked about last time, and obviously professionally and academically have pursued since? I mean, what is the root cause, do you think, of nonetheless being frightened to that degree of spiders?
Right. Well, I think Chris did a good job of kind of dissecting if it's cultural or genetic. My personal experience, I feel, was cultural. I was told as a child that my grandfather had been bitten by a brown recluse and nearly died. I know now that that is highly unlikely to have occurred. It almost definitely did not occur. But a lot of brown recluse bites are misdiagnosed by doctors. And so I just assumed that every spider that was coming near me, even though I live nowhere near where brown recluses live, was a brown recluse or had the potential of hurting me. And so I approached spiders initially from a point of fear from a very young child. And I feel like that is probably what has propelled it, you know, through adulthood. Some spiders are okay, like
yeah,
guard stuff, but most spiders I was very, very frightened of.
And so one other question, and we have some callers already wanting to get involved, and it looks like an email, so we're going to start rolling in some of our listeners' involvement here. But I guess the other question I have before we move on to some of those things is that when you first saw that tweet or tweets from Dr. Buttle, I mean, it's always nice to hear, hey, I really enjoyed your book and
right.
but hey, what about doing a similar book about spiders? Like, what was your very first response upon seeing that tweet?
Well, I was thrilled because I'm a fan of Chris's. He's an excellent science communicator and arachnologist, but I was also very worried because I was embarrassed at how frightened I was at spiders and how little knowledge I had of spiders. So I guess it was a little bit of excitement mixed with fright, you know, being frightened, because it was just something that I could finally learn about this thing that has frightened me my whole life.
Okay, cool. What's that? Sorry, I cut you off, I think.
In that way, it's the opportunity of a lifetime.
Okay, you know? I like it. Okay, so this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guests are Dr. Eleanor Spicer Rice and Dr. Christopher M. Buttle, co-authors of Dr. Eleanor's Book of Common Spiders. If you'd like to ask either of them or both a question about spiders or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663. Email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. And Dr. Spider Rice, I think, has never forgotten that when she was on the show in September, how one of the callers, I forget actually what the information they were seeking, but left her home number, announced it over the air. So I don't know if we'll have that kind of repeat of that, but we'll see what some of these folks have to say.
That's just wonderful.
So hi, you're on Talking Animals with Dr. Spider Rice and Spicer Rice and Dr. Buttle. Hi, it's you. Did you have a question?
Yes, did you push on my button here.
Yes, I have pushed on your button, if that's the right way to say it, yes.
So I agree with you. It is cultural programming. The war on snakes, bees, wasps, spiders, almost everything in our culture, in my neighborhood, if anything's alive other than a pet animal and a human, the people are programmed to kill it, whether it's a dandelion, a spider, a wasp, a bee, kill it, kill it, kill it. The second thing is, thank God when I was young, I read Charlotte's Web about 500 times, and that clued me in that spiders are amazing. And the third thing is this. Humans are spiders. If you look at what we're doing to the oceans with our nets, we are basically have copied spiders to a horrifically ecologically destructive degree, and yet most people hate spiders. Thank you for what you're doing.
That's very interesting comments, and thank you. I want to, if I could, reply to a couple of them. You're right, and in the sense that we do a pretty good job of creating a culture of fear around insects and spiders and wasps and dandelions and all these things. And it really starts when our children are very, very young, and I think we really, scientists and people that work in education fields in general, I think have a real responsibility to try to turn the tide on that and explore our biodiversity in a way of wonder and awe instead of fear and terror. So that's a really good comment. And I think that's one of the motivations for this book is to make it accessible and so people can learn. And that's really the first step.
May I tag on to that?
Please.
I think one other thing about humans is that we rarely notice another animal, like an insect, unless it's bothering us or we think that it's bothering us. So I think one of the things that we could start doing is just seeing what the creatures are doing around us, because we have an enormous abundance of life surrounding us at any minute, and they're all doing things. And some things are helping us, and some things don't have anything to do with us at all. So I think if we take a minute and we pay attention to the things that are living, the creatures that are living around us, we'll be pretty astounded and thrilled about what's happening, you know?
Well, a lot of that's, I guess, being open to that happening. Just like, again, I think your story is so important in so many ways that, like, hey, I couldn't be more steeped in the insect world than I am, but hey, I draw the line at spiders until this collaboration with Dr. Buttle came along, and now you're pro spider.
Right.
I love to hear so many people talk about Charlotte's Web as well, and a real positive influence when creating arachnophiles. So those that love spiders instead of those that hate them or are scared of them.
Yeah.
A little tidbit or an anecdote about Charlotte's Web. Charlotte's name in that is Charlotte A. cavatica, and that's because E.B. White named it was after the species Araneus cavaticus. So there's a little tidbit for you, for all the listeners out there that are interested in Charlotte's Web.
Yet another reason to adore E.B. White.
There you go.
Yeah. So we're going to get some more callers involved. But, you know, when I put the first caller on, of course, I bobbled your name, you know, Dr. Spicer Rice, which reminded me that when she first saw that you were going to be on the show again talking about spiders, my wife noted that if you had just changed one letter in your name, it'd be Eleanor Spider Rice. Now, that's all I have to say, except Dr. Buttle, I should hasten to point out that this my wife is a McGill grad, so I don't know if anybody should be concerned or not, but anyway.
That's funny.
So, okay, let's take another caller. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Dr. Spicer Rice.
Hi.
And Dr. Buttle.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm Marie.
Question
Hi,
or
I'm
comment Marie. For the doctors?
I do. I actually have a story about my encounter with a gray wolf spider.
Okay, cool. As long as it's a fairly succinct story, we're happy to hear it. We just have a lot of callers and a lot of things to get to.
You got it. I can cut it short.
Okay.
I came walking out of the drawer of my desk when I was at the computer. I started to freak out really bad, so I ran into the kitchen and said a quick prayer for wisdom. And it occurred to me to get a yogurt container, a big one with the cover. As I approached that spider with the container, he backed up, and the Indian, the American Indian in me, immediately got respect for the spider, so I spoke to it, and I said, I'm just afraid of you. Will you please come in this container so I can put you outside, and we'll be done with each other? And I went over to it, and he graciously stepped into that container and I put the lid on it. So you can talk to animals and they do hear you. It was a powerful moment for me. Thank you for listening.
All right. Well, thank you for sharing that story.
That's very interesting. She actually has a great way of catching spiders in that story. And If your listeners have a spider in their house, like a wolf spider, a great way to catch a spider is to take a cup and just put the cup over the spider and then slide a piece of paper or a postcard under the cup and carry the spider outside. It can keep you safe if you're afraid of getting bitten, and it can also keep the spider from getting harmed as you put it outside.
A very reasonable and calm, gentle relocation project.
Relocation, yes, spider relocation.
That's right. Cool.
If you want, but they're doing great things in your house, so you may want to leave them in the house. And one thing that Chris and I can tell you for sure that they're not doing is crawling in your mouth when you're asleep at night, like a lot of people are afraid of.
Well, I hear a gigantic collective sigh of relief across our listening base, so that's good to know. Yeah, but it is super interesting along those lines, though, that the thing that's cited in the book and already mentioned in this interview so far is that pretty much anybody listening within 4 feet or thereabouts, there's a spider somewhere.
Yeah, it's amazing how close we are, and we don't realize it. I mean, there are certainly sterile environments or out in the ocean where you're not going to find spiders within 3 or 4 feet of you. But if you're in any natural area and most houses, you're pretty close to spiders. And, you know, there's been studies done. There's a study done in North Carolina that showed that every house that they looked at had spiders in it. And that's been my experience as well. So that's why we actually have to make peace with the arachnids, and because they're close to us. And whether in forest gardens, in urban areas, we see them all the time associated with lights around buildings, for example. They're going to be everywhere.
Okay. And they're doing great things.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I think as we keep underscoring that, because I was just thinking, on the other hand, the people with kind of the more severe arachnophobia upon hearing this 4 feet proximity thing might be a little more extra anxious as a result. But all right, let's take another caller. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Dr. Spicer Rice and Dr. Buttle.
Hello, is it me?
It is. Please go ahead.
All right. Great show so far. I've heard it mentioned a couple of times, dandelions. Now, I know dandelion to be a weed. Y'all were talking about it like it's a bug. What is a dandelion bug?
Okay, let's see if we have answers for that. Thanks for your call.
Do you know of a dandelion bug?
Well, if our in-house entomologist is asking that question, I'm going to guess that doesn't ring a bell either way.
I don't know of a dandelion bug, but can I give you a spider dandelion fact?
Please do. I think this is the perfect opportunity for that.
Down there in Florida, y'all have these crab spiders, and they're called goldenrod crab spiders, and they live, and you see them on different tops of different flowers. And they're really cool because they're ambush predators, so they wait for something to come and land on your dandelion, for example, and they jump on it and catch it and eat it. And what they can do is they can change the color of their bodies to perfectly match those flower heads. So they can go from green to pinkish to white to yellow and match the flower heads, so they blend in totally to those dandelions, and then they gobble up whatever that dandelion bug might be that landed on the flower.
Wow. Well, in a way, this kind of reminds me of what I've learned from the book about ceiling spiders.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was struck by so many things about so many spiders in the book, but including that meaning the ceiling spider, that their appearance color sort of bespeaks its diet a little bit.
Yeah, that's really interesting. They're kind of depending on what they eat, they're so transparent. Their I'll call it skin, but their exoskeleton, if you want to call it that way, their cuticle, it's so transparent and thin that they will take on the more of the color of what they're eating, and it can be quite dark if they've eaten a lot of little flies, for example, that are darker color, or that can be lighter depending on what they're feeding. And these little spiders, we kind of came up with the name ceiling spider because I see them in my crown molding of my house all the time. And when I started talking to other people, they're like, oh, I see them in my ceiling as well. They're always hanging around the crown molding, and they build these little tubular retreats up in the crown molding, and will come out and walk around. And they're so pale and sort of fragile looking almost, but they're of course quite robust, and they do. They will have different pigments exposed through their skin depending on what they've eaten.
Yeah, well, as part of that, I read that in your guys' book that if they happen to eat a fair amount of fruit flies, then they take on sort of this pinkish hue.
That's
and
right.
I thought, wow, again, a kind of an odd experience. If you're just minding your own business and you see a spider that's kind of pink, it's like, wow.
That's a bit bizarre.
That's when you need to say, thank you for eating all my fruit flies.
There you go. All right, let's take another caller. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Dr. Spicer Rice and Dr. Buttle. Hello, it's you.
Is that me?
Yes, please go ahead.
Oh, sorry. What are those spiders that get as big as your hand and they jump? here in Florida?
Huh. Chris, do you know the spiders?
So some of the bigger spiders that we tend to see in North America are, we call them fishing spiders or dock spiders or wharf spiders that are kind of related to wolf spiders. And they can be quite large, and they can be the size of a palm if you include.
Well, anyway, they're common here in Florida, and I have a story. When I was a little girl, my mother went to visit a friend of hers who lived in Mango. At that time, Mango was just the woods, and we went into their house, and they had these great big spiders that were in the ceiling of the room, you know, in the corner between the wall and the ceiling. And my mother said, Ramona, you have some spiders in your house. And she said, oh, yeah, we leave them there because they eat the roaches. So
right.
Not everybody's afraid of spiders.
Yeah, that's a good thing. I mean, there are other species as well that you're going to get occasionally that in Florida and other parts of North America that are also large. But it's hard to know specifically what species you're referring to. But
well,
certainly those dock spiders are some of the largest.
Oh,
but some of the web builders as well that we see in gardens that build these big, more traditional-looking webs. They're in the genuses Argiope or Argiope, depending on how you prefer to say it. But they also can be with the legs, you know, close to the size of a palm, and they're quite magnificent and eat a lot of flies and moths that are around our gardens as well.
Thank you so much for your call.
They eat the roaches too, so it's really important to keep them around.
Yeah, that's right. We prefer spiders over roaches.
Yeah.
Right. So, again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guests are Dr. Christopher M. Buttle and Dr. Eleanor Spicer Rice, co-authors of Dr. Eleanor's book of Common Spiders. We're obviously discussing spiders, and we invite you to be part of that conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. So, Dr. Buttle, in response to that last caller, when you were mentioning the fishing spider, I was kind of thinking, again, in reading the book, that that spider's name kind of really undersells its distinctive talent. I mean, the fact that this critter, if I have this right, can run along the surface of the water?
Yes, it's pretty impressive. There are actually quite a lot of spiders in that group of spiders, as well as some wolf spiders that are able to run over the surface of water. And those fishing spiders are... they're amazing. They'll kind of sit next to a little creek or a little stream or pond and lunge into the water and grab minnows that are swimming by. So not only can they run across the surface of water, they can also get under the water to collect yummy food. So I always love stories where the invertebrates are preying upon the vertebrates. It's always great. But they're really fun to watch, and they are quite large, but you know, they tend to be pretty scared of us. And whenever I've sort of followed around dock spiders when I'm at a lake, beside a lake, they don't like to be around us. They really, and you'll find that with spiders. And that underscores again that they're not our enemies. They're our friends, and they will not want to be handled. So they're going to run away. So in most cases, even with the big spiders, if people are worried about them, just watch it carefully and cautiously, and almost always a spider will go the other direction and or into a cup if you're collecting it, for example.
Again, arachnophobes, take heart.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So let's read a couple of our emails that have come in. Hi, thanks for doing the show. One of my favorite pets was a tarantula. She was lots of fun to play with. She was harmless, well, except for grasshoppers and crickets. So,
yeah, tarantulas are pretty interesting pets. Although I will offer a couple words of advice for people that are interested in tarantulas. Make sure you go to a reputable store and have a conversation with the owners to make sure it's species that aren't that are bred in captivity and aren't of a conservation concern. But some of the species that you can keep are really quite friendly and can be handled if done very carefully. But you really got to pick the species carefully, and they can be amazing pets, and they can live for decades. I've got one in my lab that's pretty close to 20 years old now and still going strong. And again, she spends most of her time sitting around and occasionally eating a cricket.
What are maybe one or two other things people should know about tarantulas but don't know about them?
Well, if you're looking for a really exciting pet that, you know, you can sit and watch Netflix with, you know, tarantula's probably not your choice. People that are interested in tarantulas are interested in arachnids in general, love the body shape and the form, and love the way that they look and the way that they act, but they're fairly quiet pets, for one thing. The other thing is that they you do have to have a long view. People sometimes think that if you're going to get, say, you know, a tarantula for a pet, it's going to scurry around its cage and attack its prey and be kind of exciting. It's more of a pet of patience, if I could put it that way. The other thing I would mention is, if they're scared or if you have to be careful that they don't bite, but if you can handle them carefully from a young age and do it in lots of videos and ways to do it for sure. But the approach shouldn't be, I want a tarantula so I can handle it and put it on my shoulder. It should be, I want a tarantula because I want to watch it grow and learn about arachnids. That's a really nice way of doing it. And you do have to be a little cautious. The tarantulas will have small hairs that they can shoot out of their body that can irritate the skin. So you have to, like everything, you just have to approach it carefully and do your research beforehand. But they're amazing, amazing creatures and, you know, beautiful colors, big size. They're really quite glorious pets if you have the patience.
And if you're looking for a dull companion to watch Netflix with.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
They're great listeners.
Okay,
great
good.
Listeners, yeah.
All right, let's take another caller. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Dr. Eleanor Spicer Rice and Dr. Christopher Buttle.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hey, I just got a question, Duncan. The brown recluse spiders in Florida, they got a bad reputation. What do they say about those? And I'll listen off the air.
Somebody actually wrote in about a brown recluse. Was that you by any chance?
No, but okay. they're very aggressive, and they got a bad reputation. What's the story?
Yeah, okay, well, let me quickly read the email that's sort of tied to that, and then we'll have Dr. Spicer Rice and Dr. Buttle respond. Okay. So this email says, I was never really afraid of spiders. Then as a kid, I got bit by what they said was a brown recluse when I was walking in the woods up north. I had no idea until my arm started turning black and developed a crazy rash, and I had to go to the doctor. I have a little spot on my arm that you can still kind of see the scar. It was definitely an experience. I had nightmares after that, and I still freak out when I see a spider today.
Right, Duncan.
All right, thanks for your call.
I'm so glad that you called in to ask this question, because the story about the person who got bit and the stories of people who are frightened of brown recluses are very common stories. But the truth is, in Florida, you do have recluses, but they're on the western tip of the panhandle. They're very unlikely to be found in the state of Florida. They're not likely to be found in the woods at all. They usually are very shy, and they live in people's basements and in corners and stuff. And a lot of spider bites that are diagnosed as recluse bites are actually can be other things, like antibiotic-resistant bacterial infections or bites by other animals, other insects or insects that have gotten infected or something. And so people get diagnosed as having been bitten by recluses where there's been no spider found and there's no evidence that it would be a recluse bite. Brown recluse bites are actually extremely rare. And if you live in Florida and you think that you might have a brown recluse in your house, we actually have a great project, which is you can take a picture of your recluse and tweet it to @recluseornot, and an arachnologist will identify your spider for you and let you know if you have a brown recluse or not. And we're using those data to see the distribution of recluses and what people think are recluses that aren't. But what we're finding is that people see, like me when I was growing up, see a spider and believe that it is a recluse, even though it doesn't look anything or behave anything like a recluse, and even though we aren't even in the recluse's range where they can survive over time. So it's unlikely that someone was bitten by a brown recluse in Florida, in most of Florida, and they are not aggressive. If you see them, they're very shy. They are usually hidden. People in the middle of the United States live recluses all the time, and bites are extremely, extremely rare.
That's if I could add one thing.
Sure.
That's kind of my line around spider bites is that, do spiders ever bite? Yes, but it's exceedingly rare. Even I've handled spiders for, well over 20 years, and I've never been bitten, and I'll handle any kind of spider. And that tends to be what most arachnologists say. There are occasional bites by spiders. It's almost always, totally accidental, that and somehow the spider was startled, or there's, you know, in some way you really had to kind of work to get it to bite you, in other words. So it's not saying that some people aren't bit by spiders. That's rarely does that happen, though, and I think it's really important that you know, we try to take that view of, you know, perhaps it's the spiders, but open our, you know, open the options of some of the other things that might bite, whether it's fleas or bed bugs or wasps or a wasp sting, or whether it's something else that might look, when a Google search reveals a certain wound, it might look like something that you see online, like a brown recluse, but it's unlikely to be a spider bite. And it's a really important conversation, because it's part of the sort of the mythology around spiders, how they're one of the reasons people fear them is because they're afraid they're going to be bitten by spiders, and it just doesn't happen that often.
That's really great information about the brown recluse, and I have to say we're going to get to a couple more calls and some emails here, but I keep hearing in the course of this conversation great uses of Twitter. I mean, first the collaboration on this book between you guys, and now this thing to verify whether a spider is a brown recluse or not. This makes me feel like there are alternative uses than some of the presidential uses for Twitter. So that's very encouraging. So, hi, you're on Talking Animals with Dr. Spicer Rice and Dr. Buttle. Hello, it's you.
Hello, is that me?
Yes, please go ahead if you have a question or comment.
Well, first off, I want to add to that list of animals that we can destroy because we don't understand them. There's wolves and bears, coyotes, bobcats, and, you know, the list goes on and on, unfortunately. As far as spiders go, I have embraced spiders. I love spiders. I have spiders all over my house. I call them the first line of pest. No one is better at killing other insects you don't want around. Everything from mosquitoes and the like than a spider. They're great.
Okay, I think we're having maybe not the greatest connection. I wasn't exactly sure if there was a question there at the end or what.
No, it wasn't a question. I was just making an observation. The spider is the first line of pest control.
Okay, and sorry. Yeah, that you're sounding much clearer now. That's great. Thank you.
Yeah, well, that's a really great point. And one of the great benefits
the
of spiders is, and there's been good research on that.
Mosquitoes, roaches, all kinds of insects that I don't want in the house. The spiders are something I'm comfortable with. I've always have been.
Yeah, that's a great observation. Thanks. I'm glad we could hear more clearly towards the end. So, yeah, I think Dr. Buttle was starting to respond to that.
Sure, yeah. I was just saying the pest control part is really important, and not only in terms of our house, but also in agricultural systems. And there's been really interesting studies done in different crop types. And one of them out of Ohio was the researchers brought in sort of straw bales into the fields and then measured the number of spiders, because the spiders like to live in damp straw. So they brought the straw out there and then measured spiders and measured production of soybean, for example, and then compared that to areas where they didn't have the straw with the extra spiders, and the spiders actually helped reduce number of pests, and that actually helped the crop. And the same thing in many other crops. That we talk about the lynx spider in the book a little bit, about a really key pest or key predator of pests in cotton, for example. Spiders eat tremendous numbers of pests in some crops, and they're also often very wasteful killers. What I mean by that is they sometimes will kill more than they actually eat and feed. So that's actually really positive as well for pest control. So whenever generally speaking, if they're spiders as a sort of a natural biological control agent, it does a wonder of good for our food.
Great. Okay, so let's take another call. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Dr. Buttle and Dr. Spicer Rice.
Hi. Thank you so much for doing this. I think can be considered a arachnophobic person, and I just returned to the area after many, many years of living up north in Chicago, and we've noticed a lot of what we think are brown widows. I think we've identified them by their little egg sacs that have the spines on the outside, and we are terrified of them. And so I just wondered if you could talk a little bit about that. And we have a small child, and once we found one on the underneath of her little picnic table outside. So, you know, I'm calling to just ask.
Thank you for your call. I'll ask both doctors to respond. I'll just say quickly that one of the many things, again, that I learned in the book, just generally, and you guys can obviously speak to this much more expertly, is that it seems like the widows are just very sort of misunderstood and kind of unappreciated for what they really do, as opposed to what sort of myth and concern has caused people to fear about.
Yes, and widows, you do have
widow spiders in Florida. You have four species of widow spiders, and feel free to tweet us a picture of your widows if you'd like for us to identify it for you to the @Recluse or Not Project. But the thing about widows is that they are very shy. They're more likely to play dead or just drop down onto the ground than attack. They did one study where they tried to get a black widow to bite the researcher, and the only way they could get the widow to bite is if they were squeezing it, if the widow's life was actually in danger. They are very, very, very docile spiders. I mean, I'm not recommending anybody go handle them, but they are very docile. And also, there is a likelihood if you do get bitten by a widow spider, you could get very sick. But death is very unlikely. Usually the venom gives you muscle spasms and pains and headaches and vomiting. Death is extremely unlikely. It is not a pleasant experience to be bitten by a widow. I've never been bitten by one, and I don't ever plan on being bitten by one. But people who have gotten bitten by them, death is highly unlikely. So that is a little bit of a comfort, I hope, and also that biting, being bitten by one, is highly unlikely. But if you are scared of widows, just look. They usually nest under stuff. I wouldn't say they would nest under your picnic table, but usually under rocks and under a log. They like to be up close under things. So you wouldn't usually see one just out in the open nesting.
Dr. Buttle, it sounded like you might have something to add as well.
Well, no, just really to reiterate the point that they are around, definitely, but rarely encountered, and in most areas. And if encountered, yeah, just leave them alone is the best thing to do. And it's walking in the natural world, whether it's in a park or in your garden or in your backyard, there's always things out there that may or may not hurt us if we handle them the wrong way. So it kind of goes to that spirit of trying to just respect the environment and let it be, and then and watch it and be curious and open minded, and little harm will come to you if you approach the natural world in that way. But I do understand the fear, and certainly widow spiders as a group, people do have to be a little bit cautious, but open minded, and recognize that the threat is very, very low.
Well, and again, I think the thing to really keep in mind is what Dr. Spicer Rice mentioned, that short of like grabbing a widow and squeezing it, that they were not able to get the spider to bite. I mean, that just says how little risk in ordinary circumstances, at least, there would be
right.
of a bite. So, and one there's other thing that doesn't have anything to do with biting or their the effects of a bite, but there's still another thing I was really struck by in this book, and there were so many, but just on the topic of widows, that they might sit and wait for a meal as many as 300 days?
Yeah, spiders can go a long time without eating. Many, not all species, but many species can. And there was actually a study done with widow spiders quite a long time ago where essentially the spider went those spiders went pretty much a whole year without eating. And those people that own tarantulas will see that sort of feast and famine approach as well. They really can go a long time without feeding. They do need water, but they can go a long time without feeding. It's kind of amazing.
So we're in our final few minutes, but I just want to remind people who may have just tuned in very recently, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guests are Dr. Christopher Buttle and Dr. Eleanor Spicer Rice, co-authors of Dr. Eleanor's book of Common Spiders. We still have a couple callers and some emails we're going to try to get to, so you can still try to get in on that if you would like, with a quick call to 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org, or you can text 813-433-0885. So one of our emailers says, good morning, Duncan and guests. Thank you for the show and book. As a first-time homeowner with a foresty yard area, are there any specific precautions with regards to spiders my wife and I should take as we spend time caring for our property?
Well, you might be asking the wrong people, because I would say create lots of great habitat for spiders, because they're going to help out other pests around your property. I mean, but in a more serious note, if people are really scared of spiders and have property with wooded area or wild areas, I mean, there's not a lot per se. Some people, get concerned about spiders coming inside, but they're going to find ways inside. I think it's just a matter of, as we said before, being open and open-minded and keep an eye on them, and the species that you're going to get in your backyard and your back forest are going to be species you want there.
Okay, go ahead, Dr. Spicer-Rice.
I was just going to do two quick things. Number one, I think learning the species that are living in your backyard can help you to enjoy your yard more. And the second thing is, since you're there, at night, cause I recommend, and for people who live in their lawns, taking a flashlight out and shining it across the grass and at night in your yard, especially your forested yard, and you'll be able to see the spider's eyes shining back at you. And you will be so amazed at how many spiders are living with you, wolf spiders in particular. Do other ones exhibit eye shine, Chris?
Wolf spiders are the ones that are really known for it. So those are the ones to look at the night.
Great. So let's try to squeeze in at least one more call here. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Dr. Buttle and Dr. Spicer Rice.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hi there. I have a quick story I wanted to share with people, and it might help some people in Florida make a mistake that I almost made. I moved into an apartment several years ago, and the first night I lived there, I did not have a bed. So I'm sitting there watching TV, and out of my peripheral vision, I feel like I see possibly a rat. Well, I realized it wasn't a rat, but it was a huge spider with like 1,000 lumps on top of its back. I mean, it was as huge as my fist. Well, to make a long story short, I used the cup method and took it outside and threw it out in the woods. And my first instinct was to bash it with a broom. Well, I found out later I made the right choice because what I was looking at was a pregnant spider.
Yeah,
you absolutely made
and
the right
if
choice.
I would have hit it with a broom, I'm led to believe that 1,000 little spiders would have ran amok.
Right. You definitely did the right thing. You saved a lot of little spiders, and you also saved your apartment from having thousands of little spiders walking around it, because those wolf spiders will carry their babies on their
back. Thank you. I just wanted someone not to make the same mistake I almost made. Thanks, you guys, for being here.
All right.
Here.
Well, thank you for that story and that helpful caution. So, okay, I guess Dr. Buttle and Dr. Spicer Rice, we have sadly reached the end of our time, but we've covered a lot of good ground. And again, the book is Dr. Eleanor's Book of Common Spiders, and co-authors we've been speaking with is Dr. Christopher M. Buttle and Dr. Eleanor Spicer Rice. And the book is available presumably anywhere you get your books. You could get this book, correct?
Should be.
Okay, cool.
You should ask for it.
That's right. That's right. Well, again, thank you for making the time to join us on Talking Animals and for writing another great, really, small but mighty book that's just so packed with information. We haven't even talked about the photographs, which are terrific as well, and it's just a great resource. And thank you again for doing that and for joining us on Talking Animals. I'm sure there'll be some other series, part of the series of Dr. Eleanor's book that we'll be discussing not too far down the road.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for having us. That was great.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Coming up at 11, it's Rob Lori and Radioactivity, kicking off a three-hour block of interviews, phone calls, news, and more, including the noon hour midpoint with Nola Lillet. Then at 1 p.m., John Gilmore presides over executive session. Then the music kicks back in at 2 p.m. with Scott Elliott in the All Souls edition of It's the Music. Now, I think we're going to try to squeeze in a quick Name That Animal tune just because it just is wholly appropriate for today's show. So, again, this is a giveaway, but please only participate if you haven't won something from WNF in the last 90 days. There'll be a prize, the newest edition of the Talking Animals t-shirt, to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song. Again, kind of obvious in light of today's guest, but what the heck? It's Name That Animal tune. Looks like a few people can name that animal tune. We'll take their guesses off the air because we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Rob Lori is up next with Radioactivity. Again, next week I will be gone, but the fabulous Bev Capshaw will be sitting in right here. And I invite you to visit TalkingAnimals.net for audio archives of every show we've ever broadcast. iTunes podcasts are available there, too. There are also links to our Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. Please like us on Facebook, the show, and or me personally, and follow me on Twitter. Again, all spider-related action happens on Twitter, if nothing else. You can also subscribe to our e-newsletter to find out more about our guests a couple days beforehand and other news from the Talking Animals world. You know what? We're just going to sort of go for it a little bit here. We're going to put one of our guests... Hi, you're on the air live on WMNF. Can you name that animal tune?
Horace the Spider from The Who.
Okay, that's the complete answer. That is correct, sir. What is your name?
Clint.
Clint? Okay, I'm going to come back and take your information and get you a Talking Animals t-shirt. Thanks, Clint. Congratulations.
Great.
All right, so I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. As usual, we appreciate you tuning in and supporting WMNF. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weekiwachee, and beyond. Homegrown, handpicked music and news, community conscious radio. Thanks again very much for listening. Thanks for all the calls and emails. We got to as many as we could. Appreciate it. And again, we'll see you next Wednesday at 10. Bev will be here, but I'll see you the following Wednesday with a new edition of Talking Animals. Thanks again. Have a great, safe, and sane 4th. Again, keep in mind the animals on the 4th. Thanks. Bye.